It can be tough to build community in prison, but some people who are incarcerated find community by sharing a meal. Last month on Milwaukee's East Side, a public event called Cell to Table highlighted the creative food sometimes created in prison. It's organized by The Community, a nonprofit that seeks to correct what its leaders say is a false narrative about people with criminal records. The event is a ticketed food experience that shows the meals created on the inside using few tools and few ingredients. Producer Mackenzie Crummy attended the event where formerly incarcerated people showed off their creativity in the kitchen.
The tuna wraps, fantastic. Not the tuna I'm used to in prison.
Food in prison is supposed to be awful.
This is like ahi sushi quality tuna. It's really spicy. It's really delicious.
But what if I told you that it can, at times, be delicious?
I've tasted some of the best stuff I've had in prison. I'm not saying go to prison to taste food. I just, you know, it's... I've had a lot of really good stuff there. So
that's Brianna Krieger. She is not talking about the food served inside the prison, which she says is actually disgusting, but the meals she and her friends were able to create in their cells together.
I made everything from like jailhouse fried rice, and we would use Pepsi and honey, and it's insane. We'd make fried noodles. We would take ramen noodles and put it in a popcorn bag, put it in the microwave, let it fry up, and I mean, you just get creative.
Brianna and two other formerly incarcerated chefs are preparing a four-course meal for more than 100 paying guests. The chefs are showcasing their creativity and cooking skills they used while incarcerated. Brianna made a dessert for the event called Pop-Tart Pie.
Traditionally, what I would do when I was incarcerated is it would be creamer pudding, Hawaiian punch, Kool-Aid packages, Pop-Tarts, graham crackers, and butter. But tonight, I didn't want people dying of a heart attack eating my food, so we actually made the custard from scratch, and we flavored it really nicely with some real pureed fruit to get that Hawaiian kind of aspect to it.
While in prison, Brianna used ingredients and tools she had on hand, like a small hot pot. She could boil water for noodles, but also get a sous vide-type effect by boiling meat in a tortilla bag. Her best memories, though, sharing meals with others.
Hey, you guys can take away our clothes, you guys can take away our names, you guys can take away, you know, our families, you can rip us of our freedom, but this is one thing that we have, and it's this community that we've been able to kind of forge among the debris and the rubble. So cooking brings everyone together. It always has, and it always will, regardless if you're incarcerated or if you're out in the free world.
Some other menu items for Cell to Table are the hookup. That's a burrito stuffed with ramen, beef chili, chicken, and crushed Doritos. A side of pineapple mackerel fried rice. And tuna wraps made by Chef Nathan Bailey. He was just released at the beginning of September and already has a job at a local food cart. In prison, he found cooking gave him a creative outlet and something to focus his time.
When I was in the cell, you know, I was thinking about, like, this is what I wanted to do. It just started tumbling for me, you know what I mean? It started working, so, and I wanted to do this. I wanted to be in the food industry, and so it's clicking. My background, I came from selling drugs, so that was a different level of people-pleasing. I just switched my gears around. I just woke up. I'm like, one day, I'm like, I got to do this. Like, I can't keep wasting my life, so.
Nathan says feeding people and bringing them joy with cooking is therapeutic.
It brought them out of that, like, I'm incarcerated. You know what I mean? Like, this is a good meal. And I've always got really good feedback from it. It's cool to get in a place like that because compliments and stuff like that in a situation like that, they don't really come often. It made me feel. It gave me that sense of, like, you know, maybe I should do this.
Mackenzie Crummy, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Thanks to Sarah Hopeful for sound design and for photos from WPR's photojournalist Angela Major. Visit WPR.org. Now we turn to The Community, the nonprofit that organized that cell-to-table event. Shannon Ross is a CEO and founder of the nonprofit, which he started while serving a 17-year prison sentence. I started off by asking him, what's the common story around people who are incarcerated and how would you like to see it change?
Generally in society, people navigate the way they understand the criminal legal system and people that have criminal records from a point of danger, fear, indifference, or they deserve it mentality. So what we're trying to do is present opportunities to hear stories that counteract that default way that we approach this issue. And none of this is to blame anybody. This is how we're socialized. We're socialized in this country to view those that have committed a crime or have been in prison from a stance of danger or fear, or they deserve it. And so we're just trying to present more nuanced and complete stories so that people can see that those that have a criminal record are not what they've been socialized to believe, and are really very much so in many cases a type of person in a demographic that carries so much, not just potential, but humanity and this capacity to do things that regular folks don't, because of how close those of us that have been in the system have come to the devil, in a sense, right? And so getting to that degree, you can start to find your way back and change who you are in a way that is powerful, that isn't very common for people that haven't been in that position. And so we're just trying to present, at the end of the day, greater stories to show a greater understanding of what it means to engage with a person and be a person that has a criminal record or, you know, have committed a crime.
Well, I'm sure some people listening right now heard you say that and think, well, I do think, you know, people in prison are there because they've done something bad and they deserve to be punished, or that they are dangerous and should be, you know, isolated from society. What do you say when you get that, I guess, gut reaction from people as you try to make this case?
Well, there's a couple of ways to respond to it in asking the person, like, why? Why do they think that, right? Because some people might think that because they've been the victim of a crime and they carry that pain, that anger incredibly justifiably. And so that is coloring their determination, their view. Some people simply grew up in a household where that was just the way their parents and their family and their neighborhood saw it. And then some people have never really thought about it, but they just have an instinctual reaction based on media narratives, based on the news consistently highlighting people who had a record and then got back out and committed another crime. And so, like, each of those demographics is going to be a different way to approach it. And so at the end of the day, for each one, though, the common denominator for each one is challenging them to really say, what is the ROI on people coming back from prison? Do you want folks to be ready and stable? Do you want people returning who are going to be more dangerous? Which one of those two? And pretty much everyone's going to say, you know, unless their agenda is something different, pretty much everyone's going to say, yeah, I want folks coming back to not commit crimes again. I want folks coming back who are stable and who are not a danger to me and my family. Well, then if we want that, we have to really look at what we're doing when we have someone who goes to the system, what we're, the way we're treating them, the way we're providing opportunities, the way that the entire environment and process engages with that person. And that creates a different conversation. It takes the very justified emotions and the very justified fear based on what we've heard out of it. And it focuses more on solutions and that cost benefit. Because the key statistic in all of this is that 90 to 95% of people in prison are coming back to society.
One idea that really struck me in your work, I've had a lot of conversations about re-entry, right? What happens if that person leaves prison, finding housing, jobs, counseling maybe, and so on. You talk about the concept of pre-entry, right? Getting ahead of that, not saying, you know, the day of release, but that, I think, whole period of incarceration working toward that. What changes when we think about pre-entry as opposed to just re-entry?
And that's a perfect part of that mind shift. If we're looking at the element of people coming back to society, it oftentimes sees, and this is an unfortunate element around, I think, how we view things in America. We tend to be more reactive than preventative. And I think that's a pretty safe and fair description of how we have been for a lot of things. You go to other countries, you know, I've visited 5 different countries now in the past 2 years, and you see a different way that Europe really, really, really does things. And we hear think that reentry is the way that we should start investing in folks, because when they are close to release or after they get out, let's start getting in those resources, right? Let's start getting them a job or helping them navigate the things that they need to be stable and stay out and not commit crimes. But the problem is that's akin to educating a child when they're 17. By the time they're 18, what do you think you're going to get if you only started when they're 17? They have 16 years before that of not really having solid guidance and information and opportunities to grow. So when you're inside, if a person has a 10-year sentence, a 20-year sentence, a 5, a 30, whatever number that is, especially if it's a longer sentence, if we're focusing on them by the time they get out or close to the door, you've missed all the years when they were the most in a position to grow, to hear you, to digest the concepts and the encouragement and the possibilities of change and the opportunities as well. And so the one thing that a person has when they're inside that is a wealth that you don't have when you're out is time. They are time wealthy. And when you get out, I've personally speaking, I've spent 17 years in prison. I had significant time that I used in a variety of ways inside. And when I got out, since the moment I got out, I have never had anything close to that. It has been a whirlwind of being wrapped up in what I call the sea of freedom. So if we can get people inside to understand and give them the pathway to utilize that time wealth while they're inside, they'll be much more prepared by the time they hit that reentry phase, which is the close to release or post-release date.
What does that look like? What kind of DNA change in our prison, in our incarceration system, would it look like to use that time, you know, from the day of entry to be prepared for that day of reentry?
That's the key question, right? I mean, it sounds great, but then what does that actually mean? What does it look like? So on one side of it, it means a really significant cultural shift, which comes from leadership, which comes from the way leadership in any system is viewing the way their staff are to do their job and should frame the way they do their job. If you're framing your job as watching human beings, that turns into watching animals, and that turns into hating animals. That's kind of what you see right now. The job that systems largely have is warehousing. That's what their money is for. That's what legislators give their budget and a focus on. I know many great people in systems, especially in the DOC in Wisconsin, that want to see things go different. They want people to be prepared. But the way the money is and the way that their charter is built is to warehouse. And so when you have that as the mission, when you have that as the purpose of the funding, when you have that as the culture, you're going to have the treatment and the opportunities reflecting that, which is going to be just have beds, just have places to put people, just respond to fires and keep it so the bad news is as quiet as possible and that we're not getting a lot of negative attention on us and on the leadership in the government and all that type of stuff. So if you shift that, two things. One, the culture, and also the way you partner with entities that can come in and help, you're going to start seeing that change. So that looks like, one, having staff view their role as not just watching human beings, but in a social worker capacity, right? Like, your job is the growth of human beings. Your job is the stability of these individuals coming back to society. Your job is public safety from a standpoint of human beings being stable to be safe for society. That shifts the way you see your interactions with people inside. Two, if you're partnering with entities that are doing good out in the community, they can come in and also provide that same level of support and guidance and resources and education right away, well before a person comes home. So many organizations want to get inside. So many organizations are inside. How are we having a standard and having a partner SOP, so to speak, for the DOC and for jails that allows us or requires us to make sure that partners are getting in to meet the need, and that partners are knowing that they have a standard they have to meet in doing that. That's more than just, we're just doing something. It can't just be that. It has to be you're doing something at a really high level, the same way that universities and colleges are doing out in the world. So those are the two things, and that's the way that looks.
We just heard about that cell-to-table event. Why did you decide to focus on food as part of this this education mission to humanize people in the incarceration system?
When you break bread with people, you get to see a different side of them. You're open to a different side of them. You're open to their mistakes in a way that softens your reaction, but you're also open to letting them see you, right? And so that element of it was what we thought could be a doorway to have the public and have even people who are in this work access a different part of this issue that maybe they weren't aware of, or access the issue for the first time ever. And so when you sit down, you get food, and you get a story told through the food as well, right? The food is part of the experience. It's not just good food that you can have while you hear this. It's food made based off of the types of things that we eat inside a prison, which is based off of scarcity. It's based off of limited items and the creativity that people make with those limited items. It's based off of taking things from chow hall and from the kitchen to have something more comforting. It's a whole universe of story and of experience and impact and just relevance and powerful, parts that come together to tell that story through food that people in prison knew. So how can we turn that into a real world version of these items, right? How do we make the hookups that people are so commonly aware of in prison? How do we make that something that people in the world can eat and get that story of their resilience through the making of the food?
Shannon, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's Shannon Ross, CEO and founder of the nonprofit organization, The Community. Earlier, we heard about an event that the group organized where formerly incarcerated chefs show off dishes inspired by those they created while in prison. The community has a few upcoming events in Wisconsin. That includes their 5-year anniversary celebration that's in Milwaukee on November 6th.